Welcome back, everybody. Good morning to you here on a Monday morning. 25th day of the month already, believe it or not. Outside, it's nice this morning. 68 degrees, cloudy skies. Had a little rain around us this morning, just kind of tempting us, I guess. Should see topping out today. We should be topping out at about 90, 93 degrees, not near the 108 degrees, Doctor, we had yesterday. Did you feel all of them?
I felt every one of those degrees, Jim. Me and my chickens both. My chickens were panting.
I bet that's right. Find a place to hide, more than likely.
Yes, they were on my front porch making a mess.
I don't doubt them. Well, they're trying to find. Why don't you let them in? Cool them off.
Gracious, my family would if I'd let them.
I bet that's
right. I got to draw the line somewhere.
Somewhere you got to draw that. Well, you know how many 100-degree days we've already had this year?
Too many to count.
16.
Oh my!
Already. Mm. And we're just into the third full day of summer, so what can I say?
A farmer told me once that if it's a hot June, then it's going to be a cool, wet August. So
I've heard that before.
I hope he's right.
I hope he's right. Of course, Dr. Ben Edwards this morning with us from Veritas Medical. Certainly appreciate him being in. And we've got a guest. Let's go ahead and go out the line. What do you say, Doctor?
Yes, sir. We're very happy to have Morley Robbins back with us. He's been a very regular guest, especially last summer and fall when we really kicked off this series of trying to get to the root cause of all this chronic disease. And today's show, I think, is going to be kind of a blockbuster. You're not going to hear this stuff on Dr. Oz or even Dr. Mercola and Dr. Axe for some of you natural-leaning folks who really, and I regard those guys as really smart and cutting edge. But the stuff that Morley's bringing today is, you won't hear this anywhere. So I'm really excited. And I said a few weeks back that I was going to predict that we're going to start seeing these studies come out that show that this vitamin D thing, this everyone's low in vitamin D, so that therefore everyone's supplementing with vitamin D and getting their levels very high. And I predicted we were not going to see a corresponding decrease in heart disease, cancer, and autoimmune disease because low vitamin D is not the cause of the disease. It's a marker of the disease. And so we're going to get into that today. But first, let me say, and there's so much to get into, we may have to do another show next week.
That'd be all right.
This all started, I think, a couple weeks ago. I was doing a show with somebody. We were talking about inflammation being the common denominator of all disease. Of course, I've said that for the past many years now. And it's pretty widely accepted, even in conventional circles. People are understanding that cancer is an inflammatory disease, and heart disease is a disease based in inflammation, and autoimmune, and every Western disease, autism, and everything else is inflammation. And then Morley sent me a text or an email after the show a few weeks ago, said there's no such thing as an inflammatory diseases. And so we had a little back and forth about that, and that I said, you may just need to come on the show and explain yourself. So we've got to go there, and we've got to go to vitamin D, we've got to go to retinol, we've got a lot of places to go. So I'm going to be an action-packed hour. So Morley, thank you for joining us. Welcome back. How's your world been since we've talked to you last?
Well, I think it's just as hot, and both in terms of the weather as well as the research.
Good.
It's intense.
Good.
All good.
Well, we can count on one thing: hot Texas summers, death, taxes, and that Morley Robbins is out there combing through the literature and plucking out the pearls. So we're going to have to start calling these quarterly radio shows pearls, Morley's pearls of wisdom from the research or something. We'll think of some catchy thing. So
yeah, I don't know, or either that or the. The bullseye on my back gets bigger. I don't know which it is.
Yeah. Well, and I've got to say, the article you sent me, not this morning, but a few days ago on vitamin D, honestly, I hate to admit this, I just got around to reading it this morning. I do my pre-radio show preparation the morning of. I'm kind of too busy until then. And I got to cut and pasting parts of the article. I thought, man, that's a cool paragraph, and I'd cut and paste it over into my notes so I'd be sure to have it for the show, and it turns out I almost ended up cut and pasting the entire article. I mean, that was an amazing article, but before we get into that, so I'm kind of whetting people's appetite for the second half of the show, maybe, because I really want to go into what made you email me after that show a few weeks ago and say there's no such thing as inflammatory-based diseases. So go into that a little bit for our listeners.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate the chance to have this conversation. You have long said that in 1945, Americans were, if not the, among the healthiest people on the planet, and then made the observation that 70 years later, we're no longer the healthiest. In fact, we're probably among the sickest people on the planet. And I've taken that to heart. I really thought that's an extraordinary shift in 70 years. Basically, well over two, almost three generations, but certainly two full generations. We've seen a dramatic change. And I've used that as a backdrop to kind of field test the current recommendations for supplements versus what our ancestors might have had. And, you know, we go back to some of our earlier discussions. The cells in our body really only want to do two things. They want to create energy, and they want to clear exhaust. That's basically what the cell does. It's creating energy, and it's clearing exhaust. Because just like with our car engines, there is exhaust given off in the process of making energy, but the body, when it's fed properly, is endowed with mechanisms and enzymes to clear that exhaust. And so you begin to think about that, and then you realize that, well, wait a minute, we live on a planet that has oxygen. And actually, the more insightful researchers actually refer to oxygen as a pollutant. It's very toxic. You know, we think of it as it's a life-giving force, and of course it is. But it's like, it's a complicated molecule, as you well know. Mm-hmm. And because we live on a planet with oxygen, we need to be able to work without oxygen. And so we know that there are red blood cells in our blood. That's why our blood is red, because of the red blood cells. And those red blood cells are carrying oxygen to the tissue, but that's all they do. They carry the oxygen. And in fact, when you get inside the mitochondria, which is the little energy furnaces inside our cell, there's a key step in the mitochondria. There are five key steps, but step number four is where the oxygen gets activated. It's a very interesting term. So we have oxygen being carried by iron, and oxygen is being activated by copper. And this is a key enzyme. It's called cytochrome C oxidase. And it's a class of enzymes called multi-copper oxidases. That's a mouthful. We can use the term MCOs. Well, these MCOs are like sunshine inside our body. Because what does the sun do when we hang our clothes on the line? The sunlight oxidizes the clothes, which is it's a good thing. You know, oxidation isn't always bad. And so this process of activating the oxygen allows the mitochondria to turn that oxygen molecule, which is actually two oxygen atoms bound together, and what the enzyme does is it stretches the oxygens apart, breaks the bond, brings four electrons into the mitochondria, releases four hydrogens out to go over to complex five, and then two water molecules are produced, and that releases three precursor energy molecules called ADP, adenosine diphosphate, and then in complex 5, it becomes adenosine triphosphate, ATP, that's got a magnesium ion attached to it, so the body can see it and use it. So that's a lot of technical jargon, but the important thing is, we're on a planet, has oxygen, we must have copper in order to activate that oxygen. It's one of the most important enzyme functions in our bodies and on this planet, is to be able to activate the oxygen. Well, if the mitochondria can't do that completely and naturally, there are accidents made with that oxygen. And those are called oxidants. So oxidant, we know what antioxidants are. Well, oxidants are what they're trying to get rid of. And the oxidants are accidents in the process of activating the oxygen. And if that happens on a chronic basis, it's going to create inflammation. It's an inflammatory response. Because the body is putting out too much exhaust because it can't activate the oxygen cleanly and completely. And so let's all assume the moniker of being investigative reporters. Well, and again, you know, I cut my teeth on Woodward and Bernstein back in the 70s. You know, those were the quintessential investigative reporters with Watergate and Deep Throat. It was an amazing time, which tells you how old I am, right? but there's six questions that a really good investigative reporter answers. Who, what, when, where, why, and how. Who, what, when, where, why, and how. Well, here's the deal. Conventional practitioners answer three questions. Who, and what, and where. But that isn't the full story. Because what they'll tell you is, you know, who are the cast of characters in inflammation? You know, we know that there's tumor necrosis factor alpha, and there's interleukin 1 and interleukin 6 and, you know, interferon, and all these bad characters are involved in the inflammatory response, and they can tell us exactly where they are and what they're doing. But there's three questions that they forgot to answer. When, why, and how? And those are really important questions when you're studying this phenomenon of inflammation. Because it was in, I think it was March, February or March of 2004, was the cover of Time magazine, was Inflammation, the Secret Killer. And it was attached to every conceivable disease that you just mentioned, Dr. Ben. It's like everyone knew that inflammation was behind cancer and heart disease and all this and that. And so we were being conditioned to believe that inflammation, or as my clients here in Louisiana call it, inflammation. Hey, doc, I got some of that inflammation. But they recognized that inflammation was like a precursor, if you will. Well, actually, that's not true. Inflammation is a sign of oxidative stress. Let's go back to that complex four. When you can't activate the oxygen cleanly and completely and naturally, you're going to create those oxidants. And what did I find yesterday? I have a really important article that I've been looking for some time. You'll enjoy the title of it. I can find it real quick. Hypoxia and inflammation are two sides of the same coin. Okay, so what is hypoxia? Well, if we take a literal definition, hypoxia means that there's no oxygen. The oxygen's not there. But that's a very narrow definition. That's in the world of high-low thinking. Oh, it's either high or it's low. But that's not how the body works. The body works on a bell-shaped curve. And so it turns out that an equally valid definition of hypoxia is it's not being activated properly. And so there is a response to that ineffective activation of oxygen, and it creates hydrogen peroxide. And hydrogen peroxide is very close to water. So we have water as H2O, and hydrogen peroxide is H2O2. But you can't do anything with H2O2 to make energy. can't release the ADP. And that's the incidence of hydrogen peroxide rises significantly in an inflammatory state. And so when we come back to this, those three unanswered questions, when, why, and how? Well, when is this inflammatory response taking place? When there's hypoxia. But why is there hypoxia? Because the bioavailability of copper is being compromised. Why? Because under a state of chronic stress, we know that in acute stress, we lose magnesium in a New York minute. But under chronic stress, we start to lose copper. Why? Because in a chronic state of stress, the liver makes a key protein called metallothionine. And metallothionine binds up copper 1,000 times stronger than it binds up zinc. And suddenly, we have a crisis on our hands. And the body starts to shut down and starts to divert pathways so that we can't cleanly and naturally activate that oxygen. And that's what's even more fascinating is when you begin to delve into those inflammatory cytokines to really understand what are they doing. And it turns out that tumor necrosis factor alpha is orchestrating a whole series of events to try to get rid of excess iron. Huh? Wait, whoa, what? What did you just say, Morley? Yeah, these cytokines are really smart. And it realizes that there's too much iron and not enough copper. And what's interleukin-1 and interleukin-6 doing? Trying to increase the production of ceruloplasmin. And that's the protein that carries copper. And then when it's made properly, it then morphs into what's called ferrooxidase, which allows the cells in the body to metabolize the iron that's there. It's a really important enzyme. I would say the two most important enzymes in the human body are that complex 4, cytochrome C oxidase, to activate the oxygen to release the energy, and ferrooxidase, it's the master antioxidant in the body. So if we start having these oxidants, well, let's start to clear those oxidants. And it's fascinating, I think, that Mother Nature designed us so that we can both make energy and create energy and clear the exhaust with the same mineral, copper. But yet it's demonized in conventional practitioners' minds, which is a little frightening to think about. But the interleukin-1 and interleukin-6, they're stimulating the synthesis of ceruloplasmin, and it's a known fact that ceruloplasmin rises in an inflammatory state. So this is all making sense until you get to the point that you introduced a little while ago, Dr. Ben, about methanol. The train comes off the tracks when the body doesn't have enough vitamin A, and there's a precursor form found in vegetables called the beta-carotene, and then there's the actual metabolite form, the usable form, called retinol. And the very important research was done in 1987 at the University of Florida by doctors Barber and Cousins. What they discovered is that vitamin A is in fact required to load copper into ceruloplasmin so that it can express as ferrooxidase. That's a really important function that has to take place. Vitamin A is absolutely essential to load the copper into that protein, ceruloplasmin, so that it can express as the enzyme ferrooxidase. And here's the kicker, coming full circle, because this will salt the whole conversation, is over the weekend I was reading an amazing study of vitamin A and vitamin D as it relates to influenza. One of the best articles I've ever read, which is saying something. And the author introduced footnote number 98 by Alberto, who did a study in 1998, revealing at the end of a 10-page article, the last paragraph of the article, he says, oh, by the way, it turns out that the vitamin D supplements kill the presence of vitamin A in the blood, in the plasma, as they call it, in the plasma, and in the liver. Like, huh? What? What did I just read? And so here we have this nation now that is being pummeled with vitamin D because of a faulty testing procedure and a faulty range. Everyone is low, but as you so eloquently noted, it's just a signpost. It's not the cause of the disease. It's a signpost that there's a problem. And so the vitamin D supplements are unopposed to vitamin A, and we have been taught in the modern era that vitamin A causes toxicity. Don't you know that? I'm sure that's what you were taught in medical school.
Yeah.
Well, it is toxic if you're using unnatural levels, you know, 250,000 units, like they do in studies, or an unnatural form, retinol palmitate, which is synthetic and very toxic. And so they use these ridiculous levels and ridiculous forms and say, oh, vitamin A causes the problem, so we've got to dampen that down. When, in fact, in 1824, they were using cod liver oil to cure rickets, and in 1855, they were using cod liver oil to cure anemia. And in 1934, Whipples, Minot, and Murphy, three physicians, I believe all three of them were from Hopkins, but of course I would know that because my nickname is Baltimorely, and Hopkins is the quintessential medical center, right, Dr. Dunn?
That's right.
And but these three physicians won the Nobel Prize for using the same product to cure anemia and pernicious anemia. Pernicious anemia being a B12 deficiency, but anemia and pernicious anemia using the same product, and that product is called beef liver. Holy cow, beef must be dancing a jig right now, thinking that, oh my gosh, we've got the cure for anemia and pernicious anemia. So this is the insanity of our world now, is that historically, our ancestors recognized the importance of nutrition, the importance of nutrient-dense foods like beef liver and cod liver oil and other nutrients, and now we're being pummeled with synthetic D, synthetic A, and confusion around the fact that, well, you're anemic, so you need iron, when in fact what people really need is bioavailable copper. So we've entered an era of, I've said this before, it's post-1984. Everything's backwards. And it's so in our face, we can't even see it. But I think it's important for people to realize this, that inflammation is just an indication of ineffective completion of an energy cycle inside the cell. And is there a correlation with these conditions? Of course there's a correlation, but it's not the cause. The oxidative stress that the cell is under because of a lack of bioavailable copper and too much iron creates an inflammatory state, and then that's being attached to some set of symptoms and said, well, this is the precursor to this condition or that condition, when in fact it's revisionist medicine. We don't have the intakes of the nutrients we need, especially bioavailable copper and retinol, in order to allow the machinery of the body to work properly. So that's a mouthful. I know I said a lot, but I'm very confident, Dr. Ben, that you've followed everything, and now we can begin to kind of branch off and start to chat. How's that?
That's great, Morley. I mean, that was fantastic. That's the best 30 minutes of medical radio I've ever heard, I think.
Even I could understand a lot of it, Dr. Ben.
Let me try to do a short snippet of a summary, and then we got to go to a break.
Okay.
But, and I want people to really understand this correlation thing, and we've talked about it before, but I'll repeat myself. Just like fire trucks and firemen are found at the scene of a fire always, but they didn't cause the fire. There's a correlation there, but there's not causation. Just like you can correlate that people that eat ice cream cones drown more often. Well, that's because there's more drownings in the summertime when people swim, and people eat ice cream cones more in the summertime when it's hot. So there's a correlation, but obviously eating ice cream cones doesn't cause you to drown in a swimming pool. So correlation versus causation is what we're talking about here. And so we've correlated all these diseases, heart disease, autoimmune, cancer, Alzheimer's, autism, we've correlated all these diseases with inflammation. And inflammation is correlated with all these chemicals in the body, interleukin 1 and 6 and TNF-alpha, and all these chemicals Morley described. Those are chemicals in the body the body produces that create all these things that we end up calling symptoms, we label a disease. But those are being created for a reason. And as Morley said, a good investigative reporter, you're going to keep asking all the questions to dig down as to, well, why? Why is the body doing that? And bottom line, it boils, when you keep digging far enough, it boils down to the cell trying to make energy via oxygen that you breathed in. That oxygen's got to be brought into the cell and converted into energy. And there's multiple steps along that pathway to take that oxygen, which if you think about oxygen, like Morley said, it's very, very reactive element in the earth. If you have some embers on your fire and you get down on your hands and knees and blow on that like I do, or if you have one of those gizmos where you can puff some oxygen onto those embers, they'll explode into a flame. If you know, firemen know this, if you open a door into a house on fire that where you allow more oxygen and it bursts into more of a flame. You cut an apple and leave it on your counter, the oxygen just in the air in your kitchen is going to oxidize that apple and turn it brown. Same with your avocados and guacamole. So oxygen reacts in these ways. So the oxygen's got to be transported properly, chaperoned properly, put into the cell properly, activated inside the cell to be able to utilize it in a good way and to make energy. And then the exhaust, the byproducts of that process have to be dealt with in the proper way. And when you don't do that, because you don't have copper, the key element to activate that oxygen properly, then you create a lot of excess exhaust. I think like in your vehicle, if you don't have all your cylinders firing off the right way, or your spark plugs are a little sluggish, or there's gunk in your fuel line, dirt or whatever, you're not going to be as efficient in burning your fuel and your oxygen into energy, and you're going to get miles per gallon that isn't very good, and you're going to create a lot of dirty exhaust, and your emissions monitor is going to alert you that you're making way too much exhaust and your miles per gallon is way down. The same thing in your cell. You've got to have copper in order to properly and effectively maximize that transfer of oxygen into energy. And so when you don't, you make all these excess oxidants, all this excess exhaust, and you can't deal with those properly when you don't have copper. So not only can you not make the energy properly without copper, but you can't even deal with your exhaust properly without copper. And so then the body's going to try to do what it can to fix that. And that's the trigger of this inflammatory process. All these chemicals start to get released by the body in response to all this abnormal energy production, poor energy production, excess exhaust production. The body responds and says, wait a minute, we got to fix this, so let's make all this interleukin 1, interleukin 6, TNF alpha, all this inflammation to try to deal with this, to try to fix it, to try to bring in more copper, try to get rid of excess iron that's blowing the whole thing up too. So it's all a response. And part of that is your vitamin D levels go in the tank. So we can see all this stuff happening, all these consequences happening in the body, and we correlate it with disease, and then we try to artificially fix it, like Morley said, artificial vitamin D to artificially raise your blood levels of D. But that's not the cause. That's not, you know, we need to go deeper and be a better investigative reporter and ask these deeper questions, which is what obviously Morley's been doing and scouring the literature to find the answers as a good investigative reporter would. So that's really, really good. Inflammation is a consequence. It's not the cause, it's a consequence of disorder in the cell, primarily not enough copper, because copper is found in beef liver primarily, and we're not eating that anymore. Copper is not usable when we're under chronic stress, which most Americans are probably under more chronic stress now than ever. Mm-hmm. And you've got to have retinol to use your copper. And retinol is found in cod liver oil, and not many people take that anymore, if at all. And in fact, not only do we not take these things, beef liver and cod liver, we take other things in substitution, like synthetic vitamin D, that totally ruin whatever vitamin A or retinol that you do have in your body. Your body's ability to make and use this vitamin A is totally shut down by excess supplemental vitamin D in a pill synthetic form that everyone's on. So it's just total disaster. And that's what we'll talk about when we come back from the break.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If as much cod liver oil as my mom and dad pushed down us as kids, yeah. I ought to be healthy as I can be right now.
And,
hey, Dr. Both of you.
And I bet you could trace, if someone had ever tracked the data of when cod liver oil and eating our beef liver started
I
to
love
wane,
beef liver.
When people started to stop doing that, I bet if we could create a graph over the last 100 years.
No, I'm not quite that old, Doctor. I'm close.
Well, last 55 years.
Okay, thank you. How about 70?
I bet we could correlate as we started to discontinue cod liver and beef liver consumption, the escalation of these inflammation-based
diseases.
That'd
be interesting, seriously, because we were raised on cod liver.
Yeah, all the old-timers were, young-timers.
I'm 77. I don't mind.
Between.
You know how old I am.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about more about this vitamin D, low vitamin D. Why is everyone low? Are they really low? And what's this supplemental D do? So stick with us. We'll be right back.
Yeah, and when we do come back, folks, the phone line is open, 745-5800. If you'd like to call in, we have the outside line open. So if you'd like to call in and talk to Mr. Morley or our good doctor, just give us a call, 745-5800. It'll be open.
All right, we are back with Morley Robbins to continue this fine discussion. Like I said at the top of the hour, I don't think you're going to hear this on Dr. Axe, Dr. Mercola, Dr. Oz, or the Surgeon General, or anyone else. At least I haven't. Just digging deeper and deeper and deeper into what is this inflammatory cascade of disease we're seeing over the past 70 years. So, Morley, during the break, I think we left it with cod liver, beef liver. Our ancestors used to consume this. Now pretty much nobody does. In fact, we're consuming different variations of fish oil and vitamin D, probably the top two supplements, along with calcium and iron, I would say. And that's probably a whole other show of how all these different supplements are destroying things. But did you have a comment about historically our ancestors with the cod liver?
Yeah, I think, you know, Jim was saying that he grew up with it. What I think we have to be careful of is we've been raised to think that fat is the fat is the fat. And we were led to believe that grass-fed butter was the same as grain-fed butter, was the same as margarine, was the same as canola oil. Mm-hmm. Well, now we know that's not true. And so, back to your insight about 1945 versus 2015, There's an absolute decline in the vitality of Americans, and it's not genetic. I think it's been engineered myself, but it's the changes in the food system. And not only did we not eat the organ meats that our ancestors ate, but they changed the processing of things like carnivore oil. So that the carnivore oil that Jim was ingesting back in the 1940s and 50s, may have been different than the cod liver oil that was made back in the 1850s. I would conjecture that it probably did change, and so we've got to be careful to make this connection between the past and the current. That what's got to be the same, when in fact it probably isn't the same, because we know that the beef cattle are eating very different food today than they were 70 years ago. They used to eat grass. And they don't eat grass anymore. Well, not everyone eats grass. So I think we have to be very mindful of what changes have been made in the food and the supplements that we're eating, and that the cod liver oil that was originally conceived back in the late 1800s had very specific properties, but that there are many forms out there that you can buy in a health food store, but they're not all the same. And I think people go by price, not really by the engineering and the care that it goes to make a superior product. So we just have to be really sensitive to those variables.
Right. All right.
That's interesting.
We've got to move into this article, Morley, unless you have anything more to add. But that,
no, absolutely.
The article from, looks like it's from 2014. And I want to read one quote, and this is from Autier et al. And he says, decreases in vitamin D levels are a marker of deteriorating health. Aging and inflammatory processes involved in disease occurrence and clinical course reduce vitamin D concentrations. Aging and inflammatory processes involved in disease occurrence and clinical course reduce vitamin D concentrations, which would explain why vitamin D deficiency is reported in a wide range of disorders. We postulate that inflammation is the common factor between most non-skeletal health disorders and low vitamin D concentrations. Inflammatory processes involved in disease occurrence and clinical course would reduce the vitamin D levels, which would explain why low vitamin D status is reported in a wide range of disorders. However, increase in vitamin D levels have no effect on inflammatory processes or on disorders at the origin of the process. Translation of all that, vitamin D is a marker of disease and inflammation. It's just a marker of things being out of balance. Like we just got through the first half of the show saying inflammation is just a marker of really copper not being able to make energy properly because of lack of copper. So I guess you could say low vitamin D is really a marker of low copper, potentially. And he goes on to say if you just increase these levels, meaning taking a supplement every day, it does not reverse this process. A fascinating article. And then he goes on to hypothesize, or this article went on to hypothesize, how maybe even intracellular bacteria are really at the source of this low vitamin D. And I think you told me in your email you've read this article four times and still processing through it all. So can you maybe take the listeners a little bit through, a little deeper through how this is so, how vitamin D levels we think are low and they cause disease or do they not, and raising them is what everyone's trying to do. Kind of give us your take on that.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to do that. Again, what we have to remember, this is one of the most important aspects of physiology, is that there are always antagonists in the body. Calcium and magnesium are antagonists. They're known to have antagonistic activity. Well, vitamin A and vitamin D are antagonists. It means there's a tug of war between these two metabolites. And when you start to focus on just one, it starts to throw the other into a state of disarray.
So
that's important.
Antagonists, let me just say, they balance each other, basically. They kind of counteract and balance each other out. So there needs to be this perfect balance. Go ahead.
Yeah, but if you start taking a lot of calcium supplements, it's going to put magnesium into a deficit state. If you start taking a lot of vitamin D, it's going to put vitamin A into a deficit state. So the thing is, that article by Meg Mangan, she's a very noted vitamin D researcher. Again, like I said, I've read it several times, but I read it with fresh eyes over the weekend, which is why I sent it to you, because I completely missed the phrase extrarenal production of active vitamin D. And I mean, I'm embarrassed. I've read it so many other times. But what does extrarenal mean? It means it's away from the kidneys. It's being synthesized away from the kidneys. Well, again, we have this storybook version of how vitamin D gets made in the body. You know, the sunlight kisses our skin and it changes the cholesterol under the skin, and that goes to the liver, and then that gets kissed by magnesium, and it gets turned into the storage form of vitamin D. And then when the body needs it, it sends that storage form over to the kidney. It gets kissed by magnesium again, and it becomes the active state. That's the Walt Disney version of how the body works. What I think Meg Mangan is revealing is that it's a lot more complicated, and there's a very important figure there where she profiles the storage and the active form in a healthy person, but they're both low.
Yeah.
But in someone who has some kind of chronic condition, the vitamin D is low, but the active is high. Well, that's an important clue. And what I've been doing all along with clients is I stopped believing them about their storage D, which is what most practitioners measure. It's the storage level. I say, let's look at the active level, too. What's a completely different story? And when you find out that someone has a high active, it means that they've got some kind of disease process going on. And as Dr. Mangan points out, that maybe they're bacteria that are doing this. But again, we've got to say, let's not get caught up in the Pasteur-esque, you know, old booga booga bugs. What are the bacteria living on? They're living on the iron that's too high in our tissue. Why is the iron too high in the tissue? Because there's not enough bioavailable copper to enable the ferrooxidase to regulate the iron.
Pause. I want to highlight. I want to make sure people didn't skim over this. Normal, healthy people will have a lower level of storage D in their liver, the vitamin D storage form just sitting there, sitting in your pantry, waiting to be called on to be used if needed, and low active forms of D coming out of the kidney. So normal, healthy people have low levels of storage, low level of active. People that have some disease process going on, inflammatory-based thing going on, you'll see low storage and high active, meaning the body said, hey, let's make some active D because we need this active D to do something. One of the things active D does is go turn on the genes that make your natural antibiotics, so to speak, antimicrobial peptides, these chemicals the body uses to kill these bugs. So the body's responding to these bugs that are in the body, feeding off iron, living off iron, saying, hey, we need to kill these guys, so let's activate our D, and the D is going to activate our natural antibiotic system and kill these bugs.
Perfect. That's exactly right. And the thing is, if you don't focus on both storage and active, you lose the important understanding about what's going on. And if you just focus on D and don't have any appreciation that this might be having an effect on vitamin A, and what is vitamin A doing? It's making sure that the copper becomes bioavailable. And I would encourage people to, when they don't say copper, say bioavailable copper and capitalize the A. Because that retinol, that key form of A, is what makes copper so important in the body. And what is bioavailable copper doing? Making all the antioxidant enzymes to neutralize the oxidants that the pathogens are shooting at us. So again, the body has very sophisticated systems to try to deal with these pathogens, and there's a whole series of events that are driven by retinol and bioavailable copper, and I think what the body has is another backup plan that keys off of vitamin D that creates these amps, as Dr. Ben was saying. But what's important to understand is that in order to create those amps, you got to have vitamin A. And at a nuclear level, the vitamin D receptor doesn't work unless there's a vitamin A receptor sitting next to it. And that's the part that not a lot of people understand. These antagonists are working in a very important relationship with each other. And so what I think Megan has done is revealed how important this more holistic view of what's really going on with vitamin D, particularly as it relates to an infection. And what you're reinforcing, Dr. Ben, is it's just a signpost of some process that's taking place. And what I think is also important for people to realize is that there's some very important research, again, coming out of Hopkins. But ordinarily, I don't talk about Hopkins twice in one show, but today I did. But Dr. Amer, A-M-E-R, did some very important research in 2013, three different studies, where he revealed that there's no clinical benefit to having storage D above 21 nanograms per deciliter. That's an earth-shattering revelation, because the laboratory ranges that are being pushed by Michael Hollick and his colleagues at the Vitamin D Council start at 30. So that if you're below 30, well, you have low vitamin A. And what Dr. Amer and his colleagues revealed is, wait a minute, there's no benefit to being above 21 on the storage marker. And so I think we have an understandable level of confusion. But again, what we have to be really sensitive to is Mother Nature never presents things in isolation. That's why Condorol has 10 parts A to 1 part D. And that's why it needs to be in that kind of ratio in our body. And she recognizes these antagonistic properties, and she fosters those antagonistic properties in a healthy way in food forms, but not in supplemental forms that have been contrived and manipulated by the scientists. Yeah. So I think we just have to be really careful about how we are interpreting numbers and what we're doing in reaction to numbers.
Right, yeah, and I'll mention it. I know on Quest, at least the lab we use, it's 30 up to 100 now. Is there a cutoff for normal? Okay, so one piece that I missed on that previous summary. Storage form of D in the liver, normal. The active form's normal until if you're in a chronic condition, a chronic disease of some sort, then the active form is elevated in order to stimulate these antimicrobial peptides. But vitamin D going into your genes, turning on the genes to make your own natural antibiotics, that receptor for D going into those genes has to have vitamin A with it. So if you're taking supplemental D to artificially raise your level, you're causing your vitamin A to be depleted because they're antagonistic. And so now your receptor for D won't work properly. I mean, it's incredible, the balance and the feedback mechanisms and all that. And when we try to get in there and to micromanage it from our limited human point of view, it just doesn't work very well.
Okay, so does that mean we need A and D both in a balanced form in our
You got it. 10 to 1 is the balance. 10 of A to 1 of D. And another thing on this article I want to get to, because we're running out of time, is 10 to 15 minutes of sunlight per day or daylight exposure to even a small area of the skin, such as a forearm or face, twice a week without sunscreen, supplies all the vitamin D necessary for health, is what the article was saying.
Really?
And even the latitudes, we used to say people live in the northern latitudes, just they're out of luck. And he went on to talk about, or she went on to talk about that too, how even at the northern latitudes in Canada, you can get normal levels of D just from a few minutes of exposure, and that you will store that. You know, if you're getting exposure late spring, summer, fall, you'll store it through the winter. So a lot of these things we kind of guessed, or one biased study came out that made us come to some conclusions. It turns out a lot of this stuff about D, it just wasn't accurate.
Kind of like solar. We get it through sunlight, so why wouldn't it work for the body?
Yep, exactly.
Hmm.
Wow.
Man, that's good stuff this morning, guys.
It is. Morley, we've got to just... 2 or 3 minutes probably left. My brain's still doing flips on itself, trying to put all this together. But some closing thoughts or comments.
Well, I think, well said. I think that the difficulty is that I think the public gets to a point of, who do I believe?
Mm-hmm.
Who can I trust?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that's the challenge is presenting this information in a balanced way so that people realize that there's more to the story. And I think we have to be really sensitive to the confusion factor out there. But again, let's go back to our ancestors. Our ancestors were not popping vitamin D pills. They were working in the fields, but they were outside a lot more than we are.
Mm-hmm.
And they were eating organ meats. They were eating... you know, nose to tail, they weren't just eating the muscle meats. And so we have rejected, or that kind of nutrient-dense diet has been pushed aside, and we we're supposed to think that getting food out of a box or a can is better for you. Well, no, and I know you have tremendous guidance around that, but it's very easy in the modern era to lose sight of what our ancestors knew back in, well, let's just go back to 1945, back when we were the healthiest people on the planet. It's a very different world today, 70 years later. And I think people need to realize is that there's been a lot of unintended consequences, as you call it, in the research that has been either misinterpreted or they were focusing on some of the wrong ends of the telescope. And I think we've got to begin to really pull back and say, let's look at it through the lens of Mother Nature and what does Mother Nature provide?
Right.
You know, when you're taking 10,000 units of vitamin D, that means you should be taking 100,000 units of vitamin A. Well, that's a very different intake than just taking 10,000 units of D. And then you find out that if you do take 10,000 units of D, that you are lowering the presence of vitamin A in the plasma and the liver. Well, there's some serious consequences to that.
Yeah.
And that's what I think people need to realize is that these antagonistic relationships need to be better understood so that we can get better balance in how the body works.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Well, I've got to leave it here with the two more quotes from this article. First one, the hypothesis proposes that low vitamin D is a consequence of a chronic inflammatory process caused by a persistent infection. That's their hypothesis, which we could take that further to say because of low bioavailable copper and low retinol. Last quote. Quote, it has also challenged the notion that harm should be viewed in terms of vitamin D toxicity, such as hypercalcemia, which is extra calcium in the body, like bone spurs, hypercalciuria, that's extra calcium in the urine, like kidney stones, or metastatic calcifications, that's like calcifications of your cancer, breast cancer calcifications that they see on mammogram. We have to go beyond those potential harms of vitamin D toxicity. And it says, we have advanced the concept of harm in terms of chronic disease outcomes and mortality because adverse effects of vitamin D supplementation may take decades to be realized. Clinicians, mindful of the medical ethics precept, first do no harm, should err on the side of caution. When it comes to vitamin D supplementation. I mean, she's saying it's going to take decades for us to fully see of all these people taking this massive amount of vitamin D, synthetic D, and not enough retinol or cod liver oil. It's going to take decades for us to put these pieces together and see increased mortality and chronic disease outcomes just worsening instead of improving. So, fantastic article. A lot of good insights. And it boils down back to this simplistic thought of, you know, yes, the body's super complex, but this really isn't that complicated. Get back to how our ancestors used to do things.
Well, can I hate to keep interrupting, but I'm, like I said, I'm older than both of y'all. And I can remember back in the day, Dr. and Mr. Marley, I don't remember my parents being sick.
Yeah.
Really don't. And we, and as youngsters, because we'd a lot of, I mean, liver back, that was big.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day. And cod liver, and I was just in there thinking while you two were talking, I don't remember my mom and dad ever being sick, really, other than just cold or stuff like that, you know, because they're always out working and doing it. And
well, it wasn't just your,
it makes too much sense.
It wasn't just your mom and dad. It was all the American population was fairly healthy. And, yeah, we can say, well, now we've got Wi-Fi exposure and this toxicity and this stress and that stress, and we do. We have all these different stressors and toxins and pollution and whatever. But the body's equipped to handle lots of stressors if it's properly nourished with the right things that allow you to put out all those different fires from all these different stressors, and we're just not properly nourished. So this is
good show,
what we're getting to is the very baseline of fill your body with the right kind of vitamin A, retinol, the right kind of copper, bioavailable copper found in beef liver and whole food vitamin C. Equip your body with what it needs to make energy and to deal with the exhaust and to deal with the stressors and to deal with the bugs that we come into contact with. Our body's well equipped if we'll just nourish it properly.
And real quick, just to maybe pull the rug out from under and get ready for the next conversation, Dr. Dunn, two very important parts of our environment now are glyphosate,
Roundup,
which is pulling minerals out of the soil, mm-hmm. especially copper, and high fructose corn syrup, which is a byproduct of GMO corn, which sucks copper out of the liver. And so now that we've had this discussion about how important copper is, now we have the environmental reality that, oh my gosh, we're surrounded by elements that are challenging that. And maybe that's a discussion for a future radio show to say, how do we deal with that? How do we offset that?
So now things in our diet and our environment are sucking copper out even more, glyphosate and high fructose corn syrup. So that automatically translates to me. We need to probably take twice as much beef liver and cod liver as our ancestors did.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope we don't have to do twice as much, Doctor. Come on.
Bottoms up.
You got that right.
All right.
Hey, great show, guys. I enjoyed this. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Morley, for joining us. Always super great, super insightful. I appreciate all your hard work reading that literature and boiling it down like you have. So we're going to have you back and continue these discussions. We really appreciate you.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
It's been a blast myself talking to you, sir. Have a blessed day. Appreciate it very much.
You take care.
Bye-bye. Man, well, that's good stuff, Doctor.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a good show. Thanks, Jim.
Like I said, I never thought about cod liver oil until you brought it up because, you know, my kids growing up, I made them, they had a few doses, but then they got a little older and they kind of like, if you remember, had a call.
Yeah.
If you ever had some of that, my dad forced that down, us mom and dad. But once Dad took his first dose of that, no more had a call in our house. That went out, I guarantee. Sure. But cod liver oil and castor oil and all that we had around the house all the time. So, Dr. Ben Edwards, everybody, tell them how to get a hold of you, sir.
Well, veritasmedical.com is probably the best way. Just get on the web, look at the website. You can email us through there. Our phone number's on there. So, Veritas, V-E-R-I-T-A-S, medical.com.
Integrative holistic medicine, family practitioner. Spent a little time down at Post, Texas back in the day.
That's where it all started.
That's where it started, yeah. I was talking to my brother-in-law down there a couple of weeks ago, and your name got brought up.
Well, hopefully,
it was all good.
Hopefully in a good way.
It was all good, Doctor. I trust it. Hey, we're out of here. We're going to transition to another program.